Welcome back, everybody. Robin's here with me again, and we are recording the real fake car job. I had to scroll up on IMDb to see that.
Hello, everybody. Glad to be back. Long time no record. It's been almost 48 hours since I recorded an episode.
Almost. So the real fake car job aired on September 2nd, 2012. It was directed by John Harrison, and it was written by, it was written by Josh Scher, who has written a bunch of episodes and produced episodes of Leverage before. He's also the reason that our guest villain is Matthew Lillard, because he was working at a coffee shop. In the commentary, when they said working at a coffee shop, I thought they meant like, he was a barista, and then they kept talking, and he was like sitting in the coffee shop doing his job, writing.
Waitress in a coffee shop.
When Matthew Lillard walked in. So he walked in and he's a fan and was like, okay, well, I don't want to bother him. So if he's meeting somebody, I won't say anything. But he wasn't meeting anybody. And he's like, okay, if he sits down near me, then I'll talk to him. And he sat down like right next to him. So he's like, oh, hey, you know, I'm a writer on Leverage, blah, blah, blah. And they like struck up a little tiny friendship, and that's how Matthew Lillard got asked to be.
I think Matthew Lillard's also friends with Christian Kane.
Yes. Yeah. Aldous Hodge saying that in the commentary as well. And they went off and spent a boys weekend in Seattle together after they filmed.
Amazing.
I'm like, I need to scroll back through some Instagram. See if that was
so what do you think of this episode, Steve? You were saying something about your overall feelings.
Yes. I don't think this is like my favorite episode of Leverage, but I think it hits all of the notes that make a perfect episode of Leverage. We have a very sympathetic victim who like has a nice little bit at the beginning. We have a villain who is bad, but also comedic. And is a really great actor. We have like a long running kind of joke or question that everybody's that everyone's talking about while they're doing their job. And then we have stuff that's going back to the whole arc of this season as well. What are we creating with what we do? And like, where are we going from here? So then shootouts and fighting and car chases and pretending to be hitmen, like it's got everything.
I agree. I was watching this one thinking this is such a tight script, and this is such a good example of like base level Leverage, because sometimes they do episodes that are deviations from the norm, like the Rashomon job or the one that's coming next week with the broken wing job. And this one was just such a perfect, like, this is the all of the normal elements of Leverage at their finest.
Yeah.
Normally when I take notes for episodes, I have this long list of questions like, well, why did it happen like this? And every one of the ones I wrote down got answered later in the episode, where I thought, well, wait, what about this hanging loose end? And they closed every loop.
Yeah.
It's not an episode that's about any one of the characters. It isn't like last week's, the DB Cooper job. That's really a Nate episode. And you have some where even if it's just standard crime, it's like, oh, well, this one's more about Hardison. And this one was like just a five-hander. Everyone gets their moment.
Mm-hmm. And almost everybody gets paired up with everybody else, almost. Or they reference it in some way. So it really gives you this feeling of, oh, they're all hanging out with each other, even when we don't see it on screen during this job.
I think this goes on the list though, of if I had one episode to sell people on this show, this would be one of the ones that would be good to show someone. I mean, it's the mid season, but maybe it's like you're trying to sell someone to watch the reboot of it, you say, well, this watch this one and you'll understand what the show is and the main points of it.
That's a great question. I don't know. Or that's a great like thought experiment. Like, I don't know which one I would do, but I think you're right. This would be an ideal one. Though I do also like the, you know, when I get somebody into Doctor Who, I show them Blink, which is not a quintessential episode of Doctor Who, because the Doctor's not even in it most of the time. So I don't know what I would do, if I would do something more, like one of the more experimental ones, like The Office Job or The Rashomon Job.
Yeah.
Or if I would do one of the, like, I don't want to say cut and dry, because that makes it seem like it's really simple and easy to do, but quintessential. Yeah.
Yeah. But there are some, like, the Ho-Ho-Ho Job is another example of one where, like, it's your basic, a client comes in with a problem, they need to solve the client's problem, but all the way they do it is so tight.
Yeah.
I also really love the con in this one, because I love that it's based on, it's a really simple con, and I think all the ones they use are based in sort of real life ideas.
Mm-hmm. And I like that the villain here is also a con. Like, he's not just like a crooked businessman or something like that. Like, he's like also a con artist. So they are, you know, working with someone who knows all the tricks that they're going to use, which in some ways makes him a little more susceptible to them, I think.
Yeah. All right, let's get into it.
Okay. Let's get into it. So in this episode, Nate and the crew concoct a story about a vintage car to get a corrupt Wall Street businessman to break his immunity agreement with the government. Plus other things. There's a lot happening in this episode that's handled super well. Except at the beginning, it did take me my third viewing to really understand what was happening, because I was like paying really close attention. Because we get Erickson, what's his full name? Gabe Erickson, played by Matthew Willard, who at first glance, I totally thought he was the actor who plays the Fred Bartley in The Office Job, Josh Randall. And it's the goatee that I'm just not.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, what? And then in my head, it was like, I couldn't remember that actor. And I was like, he's been on Leverage. And then I had to like go through every episode of Leverage to figure it out. It was real upsetting. His face is on my head, and I couldn't remember anything else he's been in. But yeah, so first glance, I was like, is that just him again? I thought this was Matthew Lillard. It's Matthew Lillard. Don't worry, everybody. But he's Gabe Erickson, and he's like on a little municipal golf course muttering about golf. And one of his victims, who he's stolen money from, like shows up. And like accosts him, and the marshals come and take him away. And, you know, you're kind of realizing, oh, this guy's like under protection. And the head marshal tells the guy that, oh, that's not Mr. Erickson. That's Mr. Cole, Jim Cole, not Erickson, which is very obvious, but that this man is now under witness protection. And then you see the victim talk to Nate. But I was like, wow, how did this man track him down? He must be brilliant. Why does he need Nate and the team's help? Yeah. And then when you listen, actually pay attention to what this man is saying to Nate, you find out that he'd been out of a job because Erickson took all of his money. And he hasn't been able to find one on the East Coast. And so he had to come all the way across the country. And that's why he's like wearing a uniform and he's on a lawnmower, and I just thought he had gone undercover and broken into this municipal golf course. I was like, man, if the mob
and that after someone, all of that, his big plan is to just yell at him.
Yes.
I will say, I thought that that opening scene was really good, like, because Matthew Lillard I like a lot. But it feels like he's either, in my head, he's always either playing Shaggy or he's playing guy from Scream, whose name I don't remember.
Oh, yeah.
Gross guy from Scream. And here he's in that mode of just like, ooh, he's the grossest. When he's got the like stupid little goatee, but they set him, when he's muttering on the golf course where he's talking to himself about why it's the golf course's fault that he's doing poorly. And it sets up, like, so perfectly what kind of person he is. That, like, he's the kind of man who will play golf and, like, blame the golf course for the fact that he isn't good at it. Like, ew, he's that guy.
Yeah.
I also really like that they make the client a landscaper, because this show often goes back to the well that landscapers are, like, everyday, normal, regular people. It's like the generic job of...
That's true.
He's a good person. Very often people have landscaping businesses, and they're never... The villains never have landscaping businesses. It's always just like, oh, you are a good, hardworking, regular person who needs help. You're probably a landscaper or a teacher. Or you have know someone who died of cancer. Like, these are the things that define clients.
Oh my God, yes. Like, this is... at least the second landscaper.
Mm-hmm.
That's hilarious. And they got someone a landscaping job in that other episode with
the other
hilarious,
the boost job,
which is another car related job as well, wasn't it?
It kind of makes me want to go back and rewatch all of Leverage and just track who the clients are.
You're gonna make a spreadsheet,
like. Yeah, I might. We'll see.
I mean, we could just go through an episode list and say, though, please don't let me stop you from rewatching the show.
I mean, I will at some point, probably once the revival is, like, once there's a date, I'll set up, because I'm the kind of person who will set up a schedule of, like, if I start on this date and watch 2 episodes a day, I'll be done.
Wow.
I will probably also do that with Marvel movies when I figure out when I might actually be able to see Black Widow.
There you go. His name was Stuart on screen, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Oh,
it's more important to me that we remember Serial from Hackers, though.
Uh-huh.
Which does predate Scream and is one of my favorite movies. But yes, so he is not Gabe Erickson anymore. He's Jim Cole. And we get the victim giving his nice little speech about his landscaping business and how he and his brother had started it, and just, like, really sweet little moments of, like, talking about how they'd have a barbecue every weekend and the kids would wash the trucks. And it's like 4 sentences, and it just really, like, lets you know this guy. And he's like, you know, we're making you know, something for our families that was going to last. And this guy looked me in the eye and said he'd take care of our money. And then he stole it.
Well, yeah, it's not even like, oh, he committed fraud and embezzled it or something. Like, he didn't have a pyramid scheme that this guy invested in. Like, he just stole their money. Just flat out took it.
Yeah. Ugh. But I do like, before he kind of goes into this whole thing, he's sort of judging Nate for his setup. And he's like, I thought you'd have an office, like, secretary.
He says, I thought a guy like you would have an office.
Yeah. And he says, oh yeah, I tried it once. Had trouble keeping it in one piece.
Well, he also says, like, oh, did Gabe Erickson have all of those things? And the guy's like, oh, yeah, that's a good point.
Fair. So, also, they show his mugshot a couple times, and his mugshot is so smug. And Sophie later is like, I hate that smug look. And same, it's horrible. So, the team is looking at this security camera footage from the parking lot of the golf course, and Elliot spots that these people must be federal marshals because they have a specific Glock, which is a standard issue weapon of choice for the marshal service.
And I'm pretty sure that that's a standard issue weapon of choice for, like, most law enforcement.
Yeah. But I mean, I guess, like, paired with knowing that the client said, well, she said that his name wasn't Erickson, that it was this. That's, like, I mean, that would be my, like, logical. I wouldn't need to see a gun. I'd be like, oh, if I know who that is and they're these obviously
like, right, and this guy somehow just has bodyguards at the
That's Whitsack. Come on. I watched enough like random 90s kids movies about people going into witness protection to know.
I think I'm pretty sure I watched all of In Plain Sight.
Yeah, I did not, but
it's very good.
No, I just remember there were like several like really cheap kid movies from the 90s where the kids like were in witness protection. I think there was like aliens involved in one of them. And so witness protection to me was like quicksand. Like I figured everybody's going to interact, like encounter this at some point in their life. You're either going to have to figure out how to get out of quicksand or you're going to need to run away from the mob and change your name.
I think it's because that's such an like evocative idea as a kid that you're going to, through no fault of your own, suddenly have to like up and move somewhere else. Or that like that new kid in town might be in danger and you have to help them.
Yeah.
Like, that's, yeah, that's like a, I don't know. I feel like as a kid that taps into a lot of scary ideas that you want to like turn over in your head so that you're prepared. Exactly. So that like if you and your family have to move and start over, like you're on the ball, you're ready.
Right. And I think it's like, it's still so prevalent. One of the books I'm reading right now, it's like a cozy mystery, but she's like gone on the run. She's actually a librarian for the Library of Congress and she hears some shady stuff happen in the stacks. And then so she isn't in Witsec, but she's just like, I'm going to yeet myself across the country and pretend to be somebody else and then get magic powers. But that's not really
part Mary of that. Kate and Ashley Olsen were definitely in a movie called Our Lips Are Sealed, where they have to go into witness protection.
Oh, I haven't watched that one. Okay, I'm going to see if I can find.
There's also Witness, which is like the classic.
Yeah. These were like really cheesy. Like, I know there were at least two that were like just like kids' movies. But then you have like Sister Act. Like, come on. So good.
I keep wanting to say Blank Check was one, but I don't think he goes into. Oh, in The Client, they go into witness protection at the end. Because they get a house that's white with a walk-in closet. How is that the movie that I remember really well?
I don't know. We're the Millers. Let's see. These are all going to be, like, good movies. Like, no, I'm talking, like, straight to video. Apparently Vanilla Ice had a movie called Cool as Ice. A rapper gets stuck in a small town, I guess because of that, witness protection, and falls for a local girl. Oh no, falls for a local girl whose family is in witness protection. Oh, My Blue Heaven is a great one that I only saw recently with Steve Martin and Rick Moranis.
The Whole Nine Yards is a good one where Bruce Willis is in witness protection and Matthew Perry finds out.
Yes.
And then at the end they actually fake that. Oh, it's great. At the end he's a dentist, so he fakes the dental records for Bruce Willis.
Oh.
They like have a corpse and he goes in and makes the corpse's mouth look like Bruce Willis. Spoilers for The Whole Nine Yards.
I guess there's a movie called Wise Girls in 2002. A new waitress working in an Italian restaurant in New York City finds herself entangled in a mob-run underworld of drug dealing and murder, starring Mira Sorvino and Mariah Carey. Oh, there's Connie and Carla. I love Connie and Carla. Pet Shop? Yes. Oh my gosh. This is one of them from 1994. It's called Pet Shop. A couple of alien slavers disguised as cowboys arrive to Earth and open up an ET pet shop in a small desert town where the FBI hides witnesses against the mob to kidnap human children and sell them off at alien slave auction.
That's a whole lot of nouns in one summary.
I told That's you.
That's a lot. That's a lot of ideas in one movie. Good Lord.
Yes. Oh my God, that's the movie I was thinking of. It's a wild. It was real weird. But it has 4.3 stars on IMDb. And it has no one you've ever heard of in it. Okay, now my brain feels happy that I figured that out. So yeah, back to the episode.
All right, where were we?
Oh, okay, so the reason he can go into witness protection is because he laundered money for the mob, which they all think seems out of character for this guy's MO. And Nate says, oh no, this is his insurance. Like, establish mob ties. And then if things go south for you, then you can offer to turn the state's evidence and, you know, for immunity. Which another baddie did on Leverage. Crap.
It was third season, maybe?
Yeah.
Either way, Parker is really into the idea. She's like, that's like, so smart.
That's evil brilliant.
And smart, but bad, very bad.
Right? It reminded me very much of, you know, he who must not be named did great things. Terrible, but great.
Yeah. That is apparently something, I think there are organized crime divisions. You know, I don't know exactly if it's the mob or the Yakuza, but they do a similar thing, only the inverse of that, where they will, before they do business with someone, they will force them to put child pornography on their computer so that in the event that that person turns on them and tries to like testify against them or something, there is something that carries a mandatory sentence that they can be like, right. It's like mutually assured destruction at that point.
That's
to try to prevent people from flipping, reporting.
That's what that sex cult did.
Yeah.
The one that Chloe from
the Smallville girl.
Yeah. They like made you have collateral before you got branded so you would never leave and so you'd never say anything. That stuff is wild. The episode that we were trying to think of was the Order 23 job, which is from season 2. It's the third episode. Yeah. Okay. But, okay. So yeah, Parker is very impressed by this man's ingenuity. And she's wearing a I Heart Food Carts shirt as well to prove that, you know, just remind us that we're in Portland and that we love Portland.
Yeah.
So the mob's out there looking for this guy. And if he's careless enough to be found by his victims, then the mob is not going to be far behind. I like this next scene. So they're trying to figure out, they're like, okay, he's got to have a job somewhere, so we need to find that. And then we see Erickson pull up in this like cute little town, which is apparently or parts of this were filmed at least in Estacada, Oregon, which is a little tiny town 30 miles southeast of Portland, which looks adorable. Only
it looks so cute.
Less than 4,000 people live there.
And well, I wonder if we can go look at it when we eventually do a Leverage co-host's trip to Portland.
I'm into it. Let's go help this economy in this little cute town. I wonder if they've, it looks like a town that they've used to film for like the librarians and stuff too.
It does.
That has a like, cute little, yeah. What was the episode where they all become storybook characters?
Yeah. The like fables one.
Yeah. I think it
there's also the in the Leverage episode where they try and I think it's still upcoming where they try to stop the big box store from moving in.
Yeah,
I think that might be down.
Oh, okay.
Got cool. Very similar street.
Yeah. So when he pulls up into the street to park to go into his Job It Up bookstore, I like because at this point we don't know what it is that we're going to hook him on. That's the thing that's going to take him down. But he gets out of his little Kia or like kind of like cheesy little car, and he looks at it with disgust. And it's just like a, yeah, like a really good little like beat to kind of give you a little hint as to what he really hates about this life right now and what he would be desperate to change. And his Marshall pulls up next to him. Her name's Marshall Rose, and she is very beautiful and has the best hair, but she's very angry at him all the time. And, you know, they go through the like, I know, don't contact anybody from my past. Don't tell anyone what I used to be.
She clearly hates him.
Yes. Which is just fun to start with. Just like, oh, this antagonism, this is going to be good. This won't self-destruct at all.
No.
And Elliot is watching, oh no, they have Elliot's car parked across the street, his orange GTO. Yes. But then he's inside. So I don't know who's in it. Because later, like, he goes inside. Maybe he went around the back or something. Because we do see.
Yeah, I assume he just got out after the marshal left, that he went in.
Yeah.
To, like, surveil him.
Yeah, and he's watching.
Across the street, like, Sophie and Elliot are sitting in his car. And they both kind of look away, so she won't see their faces. And she's suspicious, but doesn't.
Yeah. Really, and they're very, they're not the most obvious that they are in this episode, but they're already starting to plant that, like, we're watching your client sort of feel. We don't have a very low-key car. It's bright orange. But inside, we see that Erickson has a sign up that says $5 for the Wi-Fi password. He's charging people and just putting the money into his pocket. And this little girl comes in and she asks for the new Warriors of Grun book, and he spoils it for her, which
says it's not out yet, but here's how it ends.
Yeah, well, she says, is the last Warriors of Grun book in? He says no, and that stupid goblin kills Mistress Fairyweather in the end. Like, what a jerk. And Elliot's like, rolls his eyes, he's like, oh, it's the worst kind of person.
I feel like Elliot has no patience for people who spoil books and movies. Like, he doesn't like it when people are mean to kids either, but, like, that's the kind of guy who, if you were like, let me tell you what happens at the end of Game of Thrones, he'd be like, no, this is not okay. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't care that you went on Reddit and read the spoilers for next episode of WandaVision. Like, don't tell me. That's not how it goes. And Hardison was 1000% the person who would tell you.
Yes. Oh, yes. Apparently, the Warriors of Grun book is another crossover. This is the weirdest crossover that of two universes. Wait, is
it real?
No, but it exists also in the King of Queens series, because Chris Downey worked on King of Queens. So there have been a couple crossovers. So that and the book title that Peggy and Alice read for their book club is also a title from King of Queens. So there's like two, like, it's just really weird to me that King of Queens exists in the same world as Lover.
I don't even know what to do with that information. And yet they went out of their way to make Psych and Leverage exist in each other's, like, fictional universes as shows.
Mm-hmm.
And they couldn't give us that, to where they couldn't make it so that they existed in the same world.
Right? We're like,
Elliot could have just,
Parker,
I mean, he mentioned
he's got a psychic down in California.
Their last name is Spencer. He couldn't just mention his cop uncle and weird cousin. That, like, oh, my weird cousin opened a PI shop, or like, they could have been cousins.
Oh my God. That never occurred to me. That never occurred to me.
Yes. It's a very distinctive psychic.
He's like, my cousin's a con man too.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
But you can imagine the team up. It'd be amazing.
And Gus would be so worried about everything, and Sophie would have to neurolinguistically program him to be quiet, to like Parker would be driving the blueberry like crazy, and Nate and the dad would just be like grumpy old men back and forth at each other. It would be great.
Who would Hardison hang out with?
Juliet. No, Lassiter. Lassiter would be stuck in Lucille with Hardison.
Oh my god. My brain and just expanded. And it would turn out that
he secretly loved orange soda. And Juliet would have no idea about any of this. She would just be like, your friends are so nice.
And the chief would be really suspicious.
Yeah. Oh. But Sophie would have to pretend to be, would have to take care of the chief at the same time.
Yeah. Who's the really, who's the really dopey deputy? What's his name?
Oh, yeah.
He's actually good friends with McSweetin. He's like, oh, you met Agent, what's her name, or he's heard about her before. Oh my god, that's really upsetting. I'm sorry that it does not exist and that it can never exist.
Sure that there's like 80,000 fanfics though of that already, so
there should be.
Yeah.
Okay, so back at Leverage headquarters, Nate, you know, we're talking about now, we need that hook. We need to find out what it is that he loves that we can get him to like go out on a limb for. And Sophie even says, like, they're looking at all of the things that were confiscated when he was arrested and sold at a government auction for pennies on the dollar. And she says, somewhere in there is the thing that they love. So Hardison and Parker are going to his house to see if they can figure out somehow what it is. And Hardison, you know, goes wireless and he's tapped into his DVR and seeing what he was watching, what he's fast forwarding through, what he's recording. Whereas Parker's like, you gotta get the garbage. Stuff's always in the garbage.
She's just throwing bags of garbage into Lucille.
Which, does that seem subtle?
No.
The house is being surveiled,
But also, it's a big black van outside of his house. Yeah. Like, Lucille is not a subtle...
No.
But the one complaint I have about this episode is that it seems like it takes them a while to clock on to the car thing. Like, they see on his DVR, it's all car stuff. He sold a bunch of cars. Everything's about cars. And then it's not until he's going through the trash and then he's finally like, oh, there are model cars in here. Hold on. Like, how did you guys not clock this as soon as you looked at the DVR?
Yeah.
Like, you know, he's sold stuff at auction. All he watches are car shows. Like, well, guess he's a car guy. Like, it seemed it was longer because they wanted that trash gas.
Well, it's the Styles and Sheriff Zielinski. Like, well, once is an occurrence, twice is a coincidence, three is a pattern. Right? You need the three things to really establish that. But it did feel like when you're watching him look at like 14 things that are just vintage car stuff that you're like, you know what? I bet he loves cars.
It seems like maybe there should have been some other stuff. It should have been like cars and also basketball and also whatever, the news or something like.
Yeah.
A few more things than like.
Yeah.
Like, oh, he also watches
psych
stock goes. yeah
I agree, but it did seem very like, hello, it's a car car. And but then, you know, we got to have Hardison being angry that he's sifting through the garbage. I did think it was kind of rude of Sophie to like throw her Chinese takeout box onto the stack. I was like, excuse me, he's working.
She was very rude to all of them. Maybe not Parker, but she was like kind of in a mood this whole episode with all of them.
She was like, I didn't get to be in the last episode barely at all, so I'm taking it out on all of you now. And also, Nate does not know what he wants to do with his life. We've got to figure that out. So we figure out that he is obsessed with vintage cars. And Nate's like, all right, I know exactly what we have to do. And he gets really excited because, you know, Nate likes cars as well.
I figure that Nate just realized, like, he had the idea, and then right behind that idea was the realization that if he played it right, he was going to get to drive a bunch of really cool cars.
Right.
And then he got excited because the con was going to work out for him, and, like, he would get to do this cool thing.
Exactly. But before he does that, we got to talk about Hardison asking the question that is just brought up. It's like the thread in the whole, kind of the background of the whole con is, you know, this guy, you know, he's the government has him on a leash. He only goes to work and goes straight home. He doesn't stop. He doesn't have friends. You know, he's basically in jail in the suburbs. And Hardison points out that this is like the ninth circle of hell for guys like him, or like guys like us. And he asks Nate, do you think you could go back to being a normal person and not go insane if you had to give all of this up? And Nate's like, sure, maybe not. I don't even think beyond the job that's in front of us, which is not okay for Sophie.
No, as soon as he's like, I only think about the job that's in front. And she turns to him with, and is just like, are you, like, she doesn't say it, but her face expression is just like, are you effing kidding me? Like, do you, what? You think that you only look at the job that's in, what?
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's like, it's the best energy that she brings to that scene of just like, dude, my dude, no, shut it down. You are wrong.
Right? And if this is what you think, you need to realign ASAP. But then he gets excited about creating a rare car competition in Portland. So they're going to need tents and trophies, a lawn and people. And they're going to need a Packard 1934 original 1101 Roadster Coupe. He like has this model and make of his car immediately come to mind. And Sophie recognizes it.
I assume that Nate knows every lost treasure thing that is out there. Because when he was at IYS, he probably always was on the lookout for them.
That's true. Okay, thank you. Because I'm just like, sometimes Nate feels very like a Mary Sue. Like, he knows everything about everything. He's like, oh yeah, I loved car racing. Oh, I love this thing. And I'm really knowledgeable on all of it. And I'm like, how? But that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. And Sophie also recognizes it because, you know, it's a piece of art. It's one of these beautiful vintage cars, and she knows art, as the Motor City Mussolini. And Hardison takes this and he's like, all right, I'm going to go take care of that. And he throws garbage back at Sophie, which is very tit for tat. And I like it. He just pieces out. And I like, instead of having the let's go steal a dot, 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 how they do it in this episode, it's really quiet. And it's just Nate and Sophie, because she says she doesn't like the smug look on Erickson's face on his mugshot. And he's like, yeah, you know, he's got $50 million backup plan. Let's go steal it. And you're like, yeah.
I think he says, let's steal it from him. Like, we're going to, this is now, we'll make it personal. We'll make him hurt.
He's not going to look smug for much longer. I just want to, like, the CSI, like, what? CSI Miami. You just need to put some sunglasses on. And have the Who, you know?
I like it.
Listeners, Robin just took her glasses off. Very, what's his name?
He's got a $50 million backup plan. Let's go take it from him.
And he's like, and to do that, I'm going to drive a vintage car. Got my driving gloves on. I've got the top down.
And he looks like something out of like a 1960s spy film.
He does.
It's great.
It's a really cool car. It's a, he revs down the main street of this town where Erickson works, and Erickson is immediately like, huh? Just drawn away from the conversation he's having. And he sneaks out the back of this bookstore, which like opens onto a very populated alley. There's like people walking down it. There's a man leaning against the wall right outside the door reading a magazine, who I for sure thought was one of the other marshals assigned to watch him, but is not. He's just a man.
just a dude.
Just standing there. And, you know, he walks up to the car and almost like touches it. And Nate's like, get your grubby paws off my car.
Which I will say because he does it, you see him doing the, sorry if you said this and I missed it, but you see him doing the Wi-Fi scam again at that point. So they hit it twice to make sure you really notice that scam.
Yeah.
But I did like that when he comes over to touch the car and Nate's like, oh, when he backs up, it's like, he's not mad about it. Like,
right.
Cole is like fine with the idea that this guy doesn't want him to touch his car. And he like understands that it's one of the only times that he's like respectful of anything, is that like this man and his car get to draw the line about like what gets to happen, and he's not entitled about it. And I thought it was good to see that like this is actually something he really cares about for a minute. It sets it up nicely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not a really great beat from Lillard. Yeah. Because he's like walking that line between like goofy criminal and like the scummiest criminal. Like he just does it really well. They talk cars for a few minutes and Nate asks him if he's a vintage car owner as well. And he says, you know, I used to be. And Nate says, sorry to hear that. It's a shame to lose something you love so much. And Erickson says, it's only temporary. And you're like, that's what you think. And then Nate also drops, which I love, that is that he, you know, he's in town for this first annual Portland vintage car show, and he shipped his car here because he keeps all of his collection offshore, and he does his own shipping for tax purposes, which is like, you can see Erickson like filing this away for later. And he gives him his card and it's very casual. He's just like, you know, I hope to see you there. Bye. And like, isn't trying to convince him to come, and just very casual. And then Nate checks in with Hardison to see if the competition's set up. And Hardison's like, easier done than said. Like, all we had to do was like put out an ad and all these guys come out of the woodwork. Which is true. Like, one, I mean, if you've ever driven by a Sonic like a Saturday night in a suburban town, you know, if there's a big enough drive, like parking lot, there's everybody with their vintage cars is in the Home Depot or the Lowe's parking lot. And in the commentary, they said, all we had to do was like put an ad out and people were bringing us their cars.
Yeah, I think they did it on Craigslist. They were just like, we're filming a scene, bring your car. Which makes sense. If you have a classic car, you can't usually drive it as like your daily driver.
Yeah.
It's not good for that. And you don't want like the wear and tear. So you want to be able to go show it off to people.
Yeah. Cause you also don't want to like have spent all that money and just leave it in your garage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a farm show in Pennsylvania that I go to sometimes with my dad, and there's always like classic cars. And then they have like a section that's like classic tractors that people have restored, but it's always really fun. There was one guy who was selling, it was like a 1950s pickup truck, and it was so beautiful, and it was like $25,000. I was like, dad, can $25,000? And he was like, no, this is not, like, A, no, of course not, and B, also, like, I'm not, you, even if I was going to give you that, it's not going to be for a vintage truck to drive. I was like, but I want it. It was like the most beautiful thing. The guy let me sit inside. And I was like, I love it. I love it. So if you have one, I'm jealous.
I know, right? My first car was vintage. It was 1982 Suburban.
Nice. also a beautiful classic car.
Well, classic car. 2 years older than me and just a behemoth.
Growing up, my dad did have a Volkswagen Bug that he had, like, kind of restored. I mean, it wasn't, like, you know, they're not, like, classic cars the same way. But I want to say it was, like, a late 60s car. And that was fun. So I got to drive around in that stuff.
Oh.
It was also easier to drive than a lot of big cars because it doesn't really weigh much. And when I was really little, he had a Volkswagen bus, the like camper one. Awesome. So we used to go camping in that. It was amazing. His name was Georgie and he was orange. I loved him. And my whole family could camp in him. It was like all the, you know, it was like all modular and they had a thing that went over the glove compartment. It like sat on the dashboard and then hooked over the two front pieces. And that's where I would sleep because I was the littlest. So it made like a little shelf. It's like a little canvas hammock thing. And when it was time to go to bed, I'd have to stand there and like hold myself really straight. And dad would pick me up and turn me sideways and like slot me in. And in the morning, they'd have to pull me out.
Oh my God. Because
it was like so tight.
That would make me so claustrophobic. But as it also sounds really fun.
Cozy. It was like really, there was just no way to like climb into it. And then the top popped up and made like a little angle and my sister slept there and then the back folded out into like kind of a double bed, which is where my parents slept.
That's so cool.
It was great.
I feel like that's just good design.
Yeah, it really was.
I love it.
Sorry, that was a weird tangent, but no, it was a someday maybe I'll own an amazing vintage car.
Probably not. You can answer Craigslist ads and be on Leverage.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But as Hardison is filling Nate in on how easy it was to get a bunch of vintage cars to show up to an empty lot, he and Elliot are sitting outside of somebody's house in Sacramento, and they're watching this man leave because he has the car that they're going to steal or borrow for this con. And he's leaving and Hardison's like, he won a trip, all expenses paid to Bora Bora. And Elliot's like, he's a lucky man. I'm like, this man is rich. He doesn't need an all expenses paid trip to Bora Bora. We do it
together. But I do love that that's like, that's just their go-to.
Yeah. And I just, they're like smug little faces when they're like, oh, he's going out of town. Oh, lucky guy. And they're just like.
And they're both wearing like black watch caps pulled down. Like you know, they like made a day of it.
Yeah.
Getting up there.
You know, they sang just two good old boys
it was,
behind the wheel.
Well, maybe they have a version of it for if they're in Elliot's car.
He doesn't have a name for his car.
That we know of.
It's true. Oh, but they're in the truck because they have to haul. They're not in the orange car, so because they have the trailer to haul the.
Oh right, yeah. Oh,
okay. Yeah.
Well, they're probably eating a bunch of like greasy snacks then, since they're not in either of their own cars. They could eat like without worrying about.
Oh, but you know that Elliot made all those greasy snacks. He got up early.
Oh yeah, no, it's like goose grease. It's like high quality.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
He made like. Organic corn nuts for them.
Corn nuts.
So Parker asks, and this is how we get the background of why this car is special, because you know Parker says he's got $50 million, why couldn't he just buy one of these Packards? But you know, this is a lost car, it's like a legend, and you know, they used to be limousines of the rich and famous, and now there are only like 30 of them left in the world, but the one that they're going to fake is this special one that was owned by Benito Mussolini, and they found it in Sacramento, but not really, they're gonna fake it because they found one that was close enough to Portland and matched the basic description. So you know, Elliot's already kind of complaining because they got 18 hours until the competition. They have to drive a 10-hour drive between Sacramento and Portland. and get it all. And Artisan still hasn't gotten through the at least half a dozen security systems on the car itself. But when they do open up this garage, there's nothing else in the garage. And it does not look like it's wired to anything. Like, it's just sitting there. But I mean, I trust Carson. It's all fancy.
Maybe it's on, like, a pressure plate.
Ooh.
Or there was, like, a laser grid outside.
Yeah, lasers. So what they're going to do is they're... Club. What?
There's just a club on the steering wheel. That's years ago, Max used to drive a 93 Honda Accord that got stolen twice in a week. Like, it got stolen, they recovered it, and then it got stolen again, and the police were like, it was probably by the guys who stole it the first time. They, like, knew they could get into it, but it was clearly very easy to steal, and they had broken the window sort of so that you could, like, basically pull the window down from, like, you could just, like, stick your hands to the window and slide it down. So he had to start. And so this car was not worth much, like a couple hundred bucks. But he had to start locking it with the club so it wouldn't get stolen again, which was always just really funny because, like, they're not cheap. And it was almost the price of the car to, like, buy a club.
Oh my gosh. That's wild.
Yeah.
So what they're going to do is they're going to convince him that this car has just been sitting somewhere for 70 years and going to get him to believe that it's Mussolini's car and have him pay at least what he owes their client, Kyle Davis. And then, yeah, Nate's like, yeah. And in the process, he's going to have to access his special $50 million stash. And then Hardison can trace where that money's hidden and we can get that too. So it goes back to Hardison and Elliot, and he finally, like, they get the garage open. But I do like Elliot goes to, like, open it, and Hardison's like, wait, hits one more button. He's like, okay, now. And it opens up and it's like, oh, beautiful car. And Hardison, picking up on the conversation that he started with Nate and Sophie, is like, I could never give up this life. No way I could ever be an ordinary person. And Elliot says, like, did you talk to Parker about that? And, you know, Artisan's first reaction is like, are you kidding me? Like, she's the least ordinary person I know that you know. Like, nobody knows anybody who's less unordinary who's less ordinary than she is. Less not ordinary? Something like that.
Yeah.
But then he's like, oh man, do I have to talk to her about stuff like this? Is that something that happens in relationships? And Elliot's like, yeah.
Poor Elliot. He's like, sometimes he's the only, like, relationship grown up in the whole room.
He really is.
You have to talk to your partner. Yes.
You have to talk about
particularly when your partner is Parker.
Yes. Opening lines of communication are very important. Especially if someone doesn't pick up on social cues very easily. So then it switches to, like, the one beautiful day in Portland on this field for the Portland Vintage Car Show. And it's already, and Marshall Rose and Erickson are already there, but still arguing about being there. Cause she obviously says, you know, this is something from your past. You can't do anything that you would normally do. This is dangerous. And I don't, you know, I have to explain these rules to you again. And they're already there.
Well, maybe they drove separately.
Yeah.
Maybe she like just caught up with him.
Okay.
Or maybe he lied about where they were going. Like, oh, I'm just going to drive by. And then, like, stop the car. And she's like, what are you doing?
That's true.
Get back in the car. What
happened. Yeah. And he's like, I just want 10 minutes. I want 5 minutes. And he also complains that he was supposed to be in Arizona and not in Portland, which I feel like is, like, just a very small thing. And he's like, you messed even that up.
And, like, oh, I thought that was because he was going to be getting moved to Arizona.
Oh, is he?
No, I thought, because isn't that the whole thing that they're, like, moving him next week?
Oh, and that's what they have to act fast.
And so then they're going to lose track of him again. So they, I thought that was.
Wait, let me scroll back up. I forgot.
But that. Maybe not. I don't know if they said they for sure they were going to move him to Arizona. I just figured that's what that was about.
No, you're right. But they didn't say Arizona. They do say that, like, apparently being recognized on a golf course is a low-level breach of security, and they're going to move him. His transfer papers are for Friday. So they have less than a week.
Yeah.
Okay. Got it. Let's see. So he's like, you know, just give me a few minutes. And so now they've got to move fast. And she's also like right on his tail this whole time. So they have to separate them. And Parker walks up in this like adorable little sundress, like a big floppy hat, and asks.
Oh, so cute.
So cute. And Sophie's got a badge on, like she works for the car show. And she asks her, you know, my grandfather just passed away and he left me this farm and I found this vintage car in the barn. And she like drops the number of like the name of it vaguely, and he hears and he's like, whoop, whoop. And so he follows her as she's going off to talk to somebody else. And Nate distracts.
Oh yeah. Cause Sophie like directs her away.
She's like, oh,
the little over the scene that they stage for Cole's benefit is really smoothly done. It's not like it seems so coincidental that he might have overheard this, because Sophie like doesn't miss a beat and is like, oh yeah, there's this guy over there, Jim, he's got an Alfa Romeo, I'm sure he'll be able to help you out, like you go right on ahead over there. And then like they turn and separate and walk away. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, mwah, so well done.
Yeah, like you could see where they could have done, Sophie knew everything about it and was like, oh, I'll go show you. But no, this like separates her. So he has to go chase after her before she can get more information. And then Nate swoops in to distract the marshal, and he pretends that he thinks that she's a judge, and she has to like put her hands on his neck to make him leave her alone.
She goes hard. She like goes after him, which if you're trying to play it cool in public and not draw attention, like, maybe don't assault this man.
Right? Well, maybe he shouldn't have put his hands on her, but you know.
Well, yeah, but I'm just saying, like, that doesn't seem.
Yeah.
It's a good hint that maybe the marshal is a little hot-headed beyond just is irritated with her charge. Mm-hmm. That, like, maybe she's not as good of a person as you might think she is.
Yeah. Does make you think, doesn't it? So Erickson intercepts Parker before she can talk to the guy with Alfa Romeo. And he's trying to con her, but also like he says some really douchey things.
He's so offensive.
Because she's like, oh, he's like, I heard you talking, and oh, about my grandfather, I know, it's such a shame. And he's like, no, I mean, yes, of course it's a shame, but I meant the car. And, you know, she said, yeah, my grandparents brought it over when they immigrated from Italy after the war. But my grandpa kept it in a barn, and I don't know why. And he says, oh, it was probably because he didn't want anyone to think he'd stolen it because he was a poor immigrant. And she's like, and
even Parker breaks for a second and is like, what? Oh, and then like recovers nicely. But what a douchey thing to say to like a woman that you're going to try to like get something from.
Yeah.
Like, is this what you think? Is this what you think charm is?
Right? Oh my gosh. So, you know, he says but he understands because he's had things that he loves taken away from him too. When she's like, I don't know if I want you to come look at it right now, because she's still a little sad. And then she's like, oh, wait, you know, you can come. And her name is Bonnie Meyerson, which is not a very Italian sounding name, but that's fine.
That could have been her mom, mom's parents.
Or she could be married. So, you know, they walk off together, and she says, the barn's just about 2 miles from here. And I guess she's going to give him a ride. Come on, strange man I met at the car show. Let's go.
Yeah.
Or like you said, maybe they both have their own cars, and he took off in his car. So Nate checks on Hardison and Elliot, who've like just gotten to the barn, and they only have a few minutes to make it look like it's been sitting in a barn for 70 years. And so they're like dusting it, which is the opposite with of dusting
what looked like
house.
A flower sifter.
Yes, I was like, is like this a spray special, or like you know, something for like powdered fertilizer maybe?
Oh yeah, that could be. Well, and then they had like the Halloween-y fake cobwebs.
It's amazing.
But
and they took out some of the air from the tires, so they'd been there for a while. I mean, you'd think you'd want to like do something to make it look like they had dry rot in the tires and stuff, but they didn't have time for that.
I did like seeing anytime they do the like nuts and bolts of the con, like the you see the actual like work part. I always love that. Like they did a lot of it in the King George job with Hardison talking about like how he had to age the paper, but just the parts of like whenever you see them with like props and stuff and the preparation for it, instead of just realizing that like, oh, they had prepared it. I love seeing that. It's like competence porn.
I was about to say that. It's like a big part of the competence porn is like seeing how they did it. Not just saying that, oh, we did it. It's the show don't tell part of it, right?
So yeah.
Oh, I don't know if it's in the outtakes for the season because I haven't watched them on the DVDs yet, but as they finish getting the car ready and they're leaving, like Elliot jumps up on the trailer and he like runs across it to like get in the truck so they can leave. But apparently right after where they have it cut, Christian Kane wiped out.
Oh, I want to see that.
And you can see, like, if you go back and watch that scene, the trailer looks kind of slick. And so he like made it all the way to the end and then apparently busted.
I will watch that gag reel and see if.
Yeah, I hope it's on there.
If it's the one on YouTube.
Yeah. So, yeah, other things they did, they siphoned gas out of the vehicle. They just make it look like it's been there for a while and they put a tarp on it. And they run away. So then, yeah, just a few seconds later, we see Erickson pull the tarp back and he like, oh, it's a 1934 Packard 1101, da 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 da. And he says, some of these pieces look like they've been restored. And Parker's like, oh. But he just brushes it off as like, oh, it's old world craftsmanship. They built these to last. And
he manages to sound so douchey again while he's saying that. Like everything he says in this scene, you're just like, oh, you're the grossest.
Right? And Nate is trying to help Parker with this con, and he's, you know, he's telling her like, oh, push the history, or, you know, drop Italian names. And Sophie's like, she's got it, Nate. Like, I've taught her very well. And you have to, the trick is to know when to leave the party. And then he has like a little thing about, oh, I showed up to the party empty handed and I met a girl. And she brings up like, this is the reason, or the reason you can't look to the future is because you're still motivated by the past. And she, I think this is really selfless of Sophie. She's like, you know, your future, like, you know, whether or not it's with me, I want you to be able to put the past behind you and like be able to move on, like whether or not I'm there. The thing is really sweet and selfless. But also like, she doesn't want to be the only reason he can move forward. She wants him to do it on it for its own sake and for his own sake. Which is, geez, it's just so healthy.
Honestly, it feels a little out of character. It's so healthy.
Yeah, she's like, I have no idea how much time.
Psychologically stable people, and what are they doing on my television screen?
Mm-hmm. So Erickson asks Parker what she would think if he told her that he wants to buy this car. And she's like, well, I just thought you'd tell me if it was valuable. And then he like tries to downplay how valuable it is. You know, he says, oh, it's, you know, it's value, has value, but you know, the engine's on its last legs and all this other stuff. But he tells her he's going to go home and do some research and then give her a fair offer. So, and he says, you can trust me, I promise. And then he gives the just cheesiest, smarmiest grin. And it's it just like zooms in on his face. And you're like, oh gosh, who buys this? But I mean, people buy that.
Yeah.
So, okay. So back at the Erickson's home, the fake home in the suburbs.
Yeah.
Marshall Rose is very angry. She's on the phone because he ran off on her. And while she's like leaving an angry voicemail. Yeah. While she's leaving this angry voicemail, the doorbell rings and Sophie and Elliot are at the door and they're so shady. I mean, they're supposed to be. And I love that they're pretending to be the McElroys.
Oh, I had forgotten that. And she's like, I'm Teresa McElroy. This is my husband, Victor McElroy, or whatever. We're the McElroys. And they say it in unison. And it's like very ominous, but also made me want, briefly sent me on like a little daydream of if the McElroy brothers had to pretend to be hitmen pretending to be living in the neighborhood.
Oh my God.
Not like them just pretending to be hitmen, but like I want to see the scene of those three boys at like loading like shovels into the back of their car trying to look shady like they're not looking shady. Like it would be amazing.
I feel like that's something they would do in Huntington, like and everybody at the Huntington Home Depot would be like, oh, it's the McElroys again. What are they up to?
But also now? I was like trying to figure out like where would they fit on the leverage team. And then I was like, they just wouldn't, like they have no skills that would be of value.
Mm-mm. Sydney, I think Sydney could
doesn't win. Know. The McElroys are a group of brothers who do lots of great podcasts. And they're delightful and very funny, but they are not subtle.
No, not at all. I think that the McElroy's wives would fit more onto a leverage team than the McElroy brothers.
Yes, 1,000%.
Like Sydney, I think would be helpful.
I feel like Clint would just be like, I just walked in and stole the thing. They thought I was a janitor. It's no big deal.
Literally just a janitor. Oh God, that'd be great.
But I don't think the timing works out that the McElroy name is a reference to the McElroy brothers, but maybe one of them was, I don't think they were a big thing yet. I think the Bim Bam was out, but unless.
2012. I mean, they were podcasting.
Yeah, but they weren't like what they are now.
Capital P podcasting.
This was back when only Lin-Manuel Miranda was a fan of them and no one else had jumped on the bandwagon yet.
Yes.
They're so the McElroy.
Franny and Barry. Barry McElroy.
Barry Bunch. I mean, yeah.
And what does Elliot love to wear? Blue jeans. Okay.
Crossover confirmed. And they hand over a cake on this like very nice stand.
Yeah. We baked you a fruit cake. And then like she's yelling it really weirdly because the marshal is closing the door in her face, like, just a little sign of thank you for letting us join our neighborhood.
Well, and then the marshal like stops and looks out the peephole again, and Sophie's face is like super close.
I love it. And so she goes and she throws the cake away immediately and puts the tray on the counter. And Sophie says they always throw out the cake, but they keep the tray. And you know immediately, you're like, this tray, this got something in it. Come on now.
Yeah. But I like that she tells Elliot that and he kind of nods a little bit like, oh, good point. Like
you're right. You know, it never fails.
I love the two of them like trading professional tips.
Yes, because and I was just like, I kind of want, and we'll talk about it more in a little minute.
Yeah.
In a little minute when they get to it, but Erickson finally comes home and then they have the most weird, unhappy married couple spat ever. Like, he's saying, you're always nagging at me. And she's telling him, you can't just go anywhere you please. And he's like, well, I'm here now. Like, it's just the most, like, we need to go into counseling or get a divorce fight.
Yeah.
But Hardison and Parker are listening in Lucille and just, like, laughing at this, you know, oh, they're just up in each other's business 24/7. There's something else to do, which feels very pandemic related.
A little bit.
And Parker says, I could never retire. Could you? Would you ever? And he's like, no. And you know, they're like, okay, we're on the same page. And then Harrison's like, Elliot told you, didn't he? And she's like, you were flailing a little bit. And then he's like, just a skosh. And she says, a skosh. And it's just a really cute moment. And that's one of the things I was saying earlier. It feels very like we're talking to each other and hanging out, and like, Elliot is, of course, being the communicator and saying, hey, by the way. I mean, he probably also like was like, oh my God, do you know what Hardison said? But
girl.
Oh, let me tell you what he said about you. And but it, instead of her being annoyed or anything, it was like, oh, this helped us broach the subject. And I got to poke a little bit of fun at you, but it's all in good fun. So Marshall Rose is freaking out that this couple rang this bell and they're very shady and they said they moved in, but I did not see any moving vans. And he says, acting strange in Portland. And she's convinced they're hired guns. And he's just a dick. And he's like, I'm going to go to my crappy bookstore job, okay? But she has enabled the GPS tracker on his phone, which is made very obvious to us and is something that we need to remember.
And that was one of the questions I wrote down, was like, why didn't she already have GPS enabled on his phone? Like, that's dumb. And then they answer it later. Like, oh, put a pin in that. You will find out why.
Yeah, just you wait.
They will close that loop.
So Hardison is watching Erickson and he is doing some research on his computer at the bookstore on he spent the last hour playing Six Degrees of Immigration, trying to figure out if he can find records for this Packard, if it's been up, they kept up and stuff like that, and to make sure that it's actually been in this barn since the war. And then he's like in a chat room for classic cars, and Hardison is 7 of the 12 people who are in the chat room. And then he decides he's going to call the granddaughter of Mussolini's custom coach builder in Italy. So Sophie really quickly has to pretend to be the voicemail of some Italian car person and then hangs up. And so he doesn't get to leave a message or talk to anybody. So he has no choice, I guess, but to call this Manhattan phone number and talk to somebody that he knows from his past, who's his buddy Charlie. And he asks him about...
He had mentioned Charlie earlier when he was meeting with Parker to say, like, oh, my buddy Charlie knows all the rumors. He'd started half of them.
So that's another fun, like, little loop that's closed. I think, like, he's like, oh, I mentioned this guy. And then, oh, here, now you get stuck with this guy. Yeah. Remember, yeah. Charlie. So... Charlie's like, yeah, if you found a Packard that spent time off the grid, then you just hit pay dirt. Like, this could be it. And he asks, what show were you snooping around at? And so he tells him.
He's like, oh, Portland.
Well, you're in the witness protection. What's wrong with you?
He's very stupid.
Yes. So he hangs up and he's like, oh, what the hell. And so he calls Parker and tells her that he'd like to pay cash for this car. So he's going to need to, you know, Nate tells Hardison that he wants him to keep an eye out and tell him as soon as he accesses these accounts. So Parker can do what he needs to do. And Sophie and Elliot are like placing bets on how much they think he's going to offer for it. And Hardison sees him leaving the store with a bag of money, or a bag that probably has money in it, but he never, like, he monitored him in real life and virtually, and he didn't do anything to get this money. So he's like, where did he get a couple $100,000? If he didn't act as any,
like, no time has passed. It was just there. Like,
it was just in the bookstore. And Elliot remembers that he took a picture of this guy selling the Wi-Fi password to the bookstore for $5 a pop. And Soapy says, oh, the parking lot scam. That's old school.
They did cut part of that scene. Apparently it was longer and there was a debate about how much money was in that bag based on denominations, because like, if it was hundreds, it could be a couple $1,000,000. If it was ones, it would only be like 20,000. And then it was going to be, that's when Elliot was going to realize it's fives because of his scam. And they cut it.
Okay. Okay.
But I like the idea that they all just know, like, instinctively how much cash money.
Yeah.
Like, what, you know, that's how much a stack is worth based on denominations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's sad they didn't leave that in. But yeah. I do like they had like a bet going on how much they thought he was going to offer for this car too. But that was fun. So yeah, Nate's like, I bet he's been running dozens of the same scam for 10 months, you know, the last 10 months, because you're not going to get that much money just from the $5. Somewhere it was like, we did the math and he'd have to sell the Wi-Fi password 30,000 times. So probably has a bunch of other scams going, which would be really easy for him to do. So because they need to still get him to access his other accounts, they're going to drive up the price and send in a rival bidder. And that bidder is going to be Hardison. And I love when Hardison has to pretend to be somebody who's he's not.
But honestly, I think he does a really good job with this character. And I think maybe Hardison just needs less time to prepare.
Mm.
I think he runs into trouble when he has time to really overthink a like character or a con. But when he just does stuff spur the moment off, like, he tends to do really well.
Yeah, but do you remember when he was playing like the farmer?
But that was great.
Potato job.
It was great. It worked, right? Compared to when he like overthought the diamond guy, the Iceman, and it was like, oh honey, no,
it was like one of his first ones. Yeah. And I think he's been taking lessons from Soapy and he's just getting better. But
and he had really good, like, he had like the hat and bow tie, so maybe he just needs like a costume to tell him who his character is.
Yeah,
it all comes from the hat and flows from there.
Yeah, which, you know, that's why Nate always wears a hat. But yeah, Aldous Hodge was saying the costume really informed the character. And he's like, and also, you don't play it funny. You just play it like that's how this character is. And they were saying he's like a Banksy Basquiat kind of amalgamation. I don't know how you could play Banksy since no one knows who Banksy is, but a Basquiat. So he's so great. He's Gustafson. And he comes in and he wants to like take apart this car for its artistic potential, like make his next expression out of it. And then he like drops the names of several other vintage cars that he's taken apart, dismantled for art. And they are, and then he says that he got them at a government auction last year. So, and they're obviously Erickson's cars.
Yeah, and Erickson just goes like apocalyptic over it. Like,
he's like, okay,
that's not the right word.
Apoplectic.
That's the word. Yeah.
Yeah.
Apoplectic over the fact that like his beloved cars have been cut up and made into art.
The glee I feel when he's like, you took apart a 1921 Bentley and a Mercer Cobra.
He's like, yes, I bought them at a government auction last year.
And he's like, welded into, and he's like, no, no, no. So they drive the price up to $750,000. And Parker's like, sold. And Hardison says, for shame. And then he tells him to get out. And then we hear Erickson accessing his accounts, and he like has these passwords that he leaves, and we find out that he's leaving them on a voicemail, and then somebody else will go listen to that voicemail and transfer the money, and that way there's no real link between them. But the in the trivia on IMDb, I found out that
Who the passwords were.
Yes, the passwords. You got them right there.
Yeah, it's so the first password is they're Milken, Bosky, and Steinbrenner. So Milken was a guy, Michael Milken was nicknamed the Junk Bond King in the 1980s. So at the height of his success, he earned between $200 million and $550 million a year. And then Bosky is a former American stock trader who became infamous for his prominent role in an insider trading scandal. So he was charged and pled guilty to insider trading and was fined a record $100 million and became an informant. And then Steinbrenner is the owner of the New York Yankees.
Yes.
So I like that those three are like really inform what kind of character this guy is. Mm-hmm. And I also like that they didn't just have the three car names.
Yes. I thought it was good. Steinbrenner also pled guilty to charges of making illegal campaign contributions to Richard Nixon. So,
oh, all right.
And was penalized by the Major League Baseball Association for paying Howie Spira to dig up dirt on one of his players. So that's great. And, you know, Hardison's getting all this information. So he's tracking the IP addresses, but until he can actually get a bank location, the passwords that he has are useless. So then Nate gets a call from Erickson saying, hey, do you remember me? We met and I used to be an owner. And so he's going to get him to ship this car overseas. Whatever, just ship it away, keep it safe. And then we get the fun assassin theater. I like to think of it because Sophie and Elliot are like outside a hardware store, loading stuff into the trunk of the GTO while the marshal watches. And then she's like lining the trunk with trash bags or tarp. And he's got an axe. And she's like, are we being suspicious enough?
He just like holds up the axe and stares at her.
She's like, okay. And she's wearing like a belted trench and he's got all black on too. And they're just.
I think that's her same outfit as when she was pretending to be like Annie something from the London mob.
Mm.
I think that's her like, that's like her scary hitter coat. I think she also wore it in the potato job when she was pretending to be the hitter. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's her scary trench coat.
I love in shows when the characters have the same, like, the same outfit because you wear the same clothes more than once. Come on.
Mm-hmm.
That's how things work. I'm going to go see if there are any pictures of her in that. No, I don't think so because she was pregnant and she didn't have a clothes jacket.
When she was in the mob?
Yeah.
Which one was that? That wasn't, was that Beantown?
I think it's Beantown Bailout. There are like three pictures and they're all of Nate on IMDb. Boring. I'll see if I can find it later. But it's something, she does have a trench, but it's just not closed because she's a dress.
Okay.
But, you know, they're being suspicious. She like tests out duct tape, like she like pulls it to be like, I guess is a sticky, and just to show up they have a big roll of duct tape, and she has some like jute rope or twine, and Elliot then shares some of his know-how and says, oh, you know, for future reference, you can chew right through that, so don't use that to tie people up. She's like, oh, okay, good to know. And they head out. They're at a oh, she asked like any other tips from back in the day when you used to, like, makes like a slashing motion on her neck and he just shakes his head. And then it switches to them in a field, and Elliot is digging a grave, a shallow grave, and they're still going on. And this is when I was like, I just want the show to be them. Everybody's an assassin. They're all like hitmen and they have to work together. And I just think it'd be amazing. And like, just thinking of the different personalities and what their different specialties would be.
Yeah.
To kill people would be fun. Like, but Sophie would be the Black Widow, and Elliot would just take people out the way that he normally does, and Hardison would have like Final Destination type, like, yeah, like Rube Goldberg things that happen in your house that make it look like an accident. And Parker is like in Gross Point Blank when he's like has the poison coming down the thing because he's hiding in the roof, and
Nate would just shoot him,
push him off something. Oh, Nate would orchestrate you to accidentally kill yourself.
Oh yeah. That's true. Yeah. That's how he killed those two men, actually. Yeah. Was that, wasn't it? Yeah.
We've got the proof. but I do like that, but Elliot's this like,
is where they're talking about like who would do better if they retired, right?
Yes. But it starts out where he's like, this after sunset, this field's gonna be completely dark. No clear sight lines from the road. First thing to find a body out here would be a coyote. And she's like, I'm scared. And he's like, I'm here. Like, you don't need to be scared. She's like, yeah, you're the scary thing.
Also, at this point, he like has pulled half of his hair back in like a very, I don't even know what that's called, but like what?
It's like half up.
It's a very like junior high school like pullback. Because he's right? Also wearing, he has like, he's taken off his suit jacket. He's wearing galoshes with like his pants cuffed up above them. It's just, it's a big look that he's rocking where he's like very offended that he's the scary one.
Right? He's like, what?
And he's talking about like coyotes finding a dead body. But Sophie asked for tips.
Right? But when she says she's scared, he's offended that she does not feel safe because he's like, I'm here. Like, you're going to be fine. Nothing can happen. No coyotes are good. Yeah, I'll take out any of the coyotes. Yeah, in the commentary, Aldous Hodge is the one who points out the galoshes, and everybody else is like, oh my god, he is wearing galoshes.
It's quite, you don't really see him until he climbs out of the grave, but like, yeah. It's a lot of look.
It's amazing. And they have the conversation between the two of them of, you know, what would you do? Sophie asks, which one of us do you think would cope better with being an ordinary person without going mad? And I don't know if she means like of the whole group or just between the two of us. And he's like, it's me. Like, no question. And she's like, well, I think it would be me. And he's like, no. Nope.
She tries to be like cute, but she's like, oh, you think so? Because I was thinking maybe it was me. Like, and he's just like, no, it's me.
It's me.
Which he's right, I think.
Yeah. I don't think he could be normal, but I think he'd be the one who would go crazy the last.
They talk about the Kung Fu Monkey blog that, like, Sophie had been trying to live like a normal person when we find her. Like, she's trying to live like a civilian. But Elliot has already decided to stop killing people. And, like, Elliot could open a restaurant and be a chef and be very happy
and successful. Like,
yeah, but Sophie is not going to make it as an actress and probably would not be happy making it as an actress. And it would not be too long before she started conning people again because that's what she likes to do.
I mean, you see how fast she was willing to like be like, okay, goodbye to, you know, regular life and join up with Nate when she had left the game. You know,
it also seems like the kind of thing where, like, if you're gonna be a hitter, you're gonna age out of that role before too long,
right? Oh yeah, we totally skipped the other thing that he says about what he would do when he retires, and you were saying like he says he'd open a restaurant, And he's like, I always wanted to open my own restaurant. Now I'm probably going to get stuck making sure Hardison's doesn't go out of business. And I love, like, he's...
But he looks so excited while he says that.
Exactly. He's, the words are grumpy, but he looks like he's already committed to this business, to Hardison, and, you know, them, to Parker. Just, you know.
He also gets to do whatever he wants with that restaurant. Like,
yeah.
I guess he isn't running it. Like, you find out in the next episode that Hardison is the boss of it, but he gets up with whatever he wants for the menu and stuff.
Yeah. But then he says, throw a couple of drunks out every once in a while. Maybe the place will get robbed once a year. Cause he's like anticipating some exciting things so that it won't be just monotonous. He's like, maybe I will get to beat someone up every now and then.
Well, he could like join a gym.
Yeah.
And do boxing or something.
He needs to teach self-defense classes to young children again. Like in the fairy godparent's job.
Oh, yeah. He'd be great at that.
So the marshal gets a... She's been watching them this whole time. She gets a notification on her phone that Erickson has transferred a bunch of money. And she comes to the conclusion that these hitmen are not mob hitmen. They've been hired... to probably take her out. So she straight up calls the police.
You don't get that at first. She's like, wait, these aren't mob hitmen. They're here. Oh, I gotta call the police. And because
that's right.
I was like, they're here for who? They don't answer that. And then that's, you find out in like a couple of scenes. Oh no.
Yeah. Yeah.
She thinks that they're here to kill her.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, so she calls the police and leaves. Meanwhile, Nate is at the warehouse and he's at the docks telling Parker and Hardison to get there as soon as they can. And he calls Erickson to tell him that, you know, I'm at the warehouse, the car, and the Meyerson girl's on her way to sign the papers. And he's like, oh, I know this place is huge, right? Like, I hope you can find me. I'm on the south end. Give me a call when you get this. And Sophie's tired. And Ellie's like, you're tired. I've been digging a grave.
Must be all the fresh air you're breathing. This is where, like, she is salty to people this episode.
Mm-hmm. And they hear sirens and they realize, oh no, the marshal's gone and she called the cops on us. And Elliot like jumps out of the hole and like runs away. And they in the commentary. They were like, oh, that means that he's wearing his galoshes while he's in a high-speed chase driving this car.
Maybe he kicks them off while he's driving, like does that awkward thing where you switch one foot on the pedal to try to like get your socks off or something.
I don't know why he didn't have Sophie drive, because we know that she can drive like a bat out of hell. But it's his car. He's very controlling about things like that.
That's true.
So Nate is still, you know, he's like, well, what's going on? Is our cover blown? Did she tell the police? Do y'all know where she is right now? And then there's that like classic shot of he turns a corner and there's a gun behind his head, you know, and it's the marshal. And she cuffs him to a chair and is accusing him of helping Cole murder her for money. And he's like, wait, what? What are you talking about? And Erickson's like, yeah. And Erickson is confused too. And she's like, I'm talking about the two hitmen you hired to have me killed. And he's like, I didn't hire him. What's wrong with you? And Nate's like, I need a little help. But Elliot and Sophie are being chased by the police and they're too busy. And Hardison's like, we're coming. And Erickson wonders how she found them. And she's like, well, I'm an idiot. I activated the GPS tracker on your phone and I followed you here. And he's angry at her because she violated his privacy. And she's still like, you know, dialed into this whole, you hired hitmen to kill me. And I like that he says, nobody's plotting to kill you. And then he calls her an idiot. He says, you idiot. Where I think in another show, if there was a female character who was saying something this outrageous, a male character would be like, you dumb bitch, like, would just like really make it a you're a stupid woman who's exaggerating. Oh, yeah. But he's just very, it's a very like non-gendered, you're just an idiot. and that just struck me. I was like, I like that. Good job, Leverage. Nate is trying to play like couples counselor here. And he like,
oh, it's so good.
Moves the chair forward.
Yeah, because he's in a roll. They have him cuffed to him rolling off his chair. And he's like sliding forward and like spinning around and kind of trying to get comfortable and like cross his legs.
Oh, and he, so he's like, yeah, nobody hired any hitman. Like Mr. Cole just wanted to buy a vintage car and I said I'd ship it. And she gets so angry and she punches him and she's like, I did not sell out the Marshall services so that you could throw away all of our planning on a car. And then you're like, what?
That twist, man, like, because they lead up to it and it's, but you don't see it coming. It's so well done.
Yeah.
One of their best.
Yeah, I agree. And then once she lets this go, like the way he talks to her is even more casual. Like he doesn't call her Marshall Rose. He calls her Ellie. Like he calls her by her first name. And, you know, he's like, he tells her that the punch hurt, which obviously, but that, you know, he's in control and he's been in control since she agreed to get him out of the country after he testifies. And then we find out that she agreed for $5 million, but that also like that payday is not coming for a couple of years because that's how long it'll take for him to testify. And she's like, and you can't go 10 months without screwing something up.
She's got a good point that like, the way things are going, she's not going to get that $5 million.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, she's like, the government's going to find this money. They're just waiting for you to screw up so that they can find your little hiding place. And she pulls her gun on him, and he's like, you're not going to shoot me because it'll make you look bad. Like, you screwed up the biggest assignment of your life. And Nate's like, and you won't get the $5 million. And she turns her gun on him and she's like, that's why I'm going to shoot you. And then they're going to fake his death, fake Erickson's death, so they can get him out of the country because she wants to get paid. And she even has like a mob dentist that she used to protect who can fake the records.
I mean, it's a really good plan, honestly.
It is a great like, plan. Yeah.
She seems to be the one who's like really thinking through how to get them out of this. Erickson's like, but I want my car.
And people would only listen to Ellie Rose. Her name is Ellie Rose. Things could get accomplished, but no. So Erickson's like, oh yeah, I like this plan. This is a good plan. And Nate's like, oh God. He's like, Elliot, Sophie, get here and bring the cops. And Hardison, bring me some orange soda. And Hardison's first reaction is, I can't dip into my stash, Nate.
I really thought orange soda was going to be code for something.
Right?
I thought it was going to be code for, like, the good explosives. No, just soda.
Just soda. And this is where you're going to have to pay really close attention to how the geography is when you're watching this episode, because there's a lot of stuff happening in this warehouse simultaneously.
They do give you a few overhead shots, which I really appreciated. There's like aerial shots of where everybody is.
Yeah. So they're fighting over who gets to shoot Nate. And Nate is trying to talk them down and he... Okay, I'm just going to read it because I would always like get distracted during this part. But you know, he's like, Marshall, you know, I know you're upset and everything, but really you can't blame him for something that happened yesterday. The past is the past. This is going back to our whole thread of this episode. I mean, you can't blame him for anything that happened 20 minutes ago, 2 minutes ago. What you need to be thinking about, I think, is what's going to happen next. And so he's like, is anybody recording this? I need a record.
Yeah, because it's exactly what she said to him earlier.
Yeah. She's like, oh, he needs to work through this stuff in real time. He needs like tangible stuff. He can't deal in abstracts. And Parker and Hardison are inside, and they are like, whatever's being stored in this warehouse are in these large drums, and they do have a 2-liter bottle of orange soda.
So they're trying to sneak around to behind the marshal.
Yes. Yes. And Hardison says, Nate, you're not going to believe who just showed up. And then we see like the camera angle changes, and we see several mob men on the other side of a wall.
It's the mob.
They found
them. Which is also a very well done twist, because they've been talking about the mob off and on throughout the episode, but it feels kind of like, I don't know, backgroundy, or like they're not like a present force that's happening. And then they show up and you're like, oh, right. They also would have a stake in this whole situation.
Yeah. And they even, you know, said earlier, like if his former clients are able to stumble upon him, the mob is not going to be far behind, which is why, you know, they have transfer papers to move him Friday, but the mob moves fast. They're very motivated. And then we get a flashback to Charlie from earlier.
The car guy.
And he's being interrogated by Don Paolo, the mob boss. And then the phone rings and it's Erickson. So
before the phone even rings, he's like, do you have anything that would convince us not to tie you up in a bag with the nearest mountain lion, which is such a good threat of like it's evocative, it's got imagery, it's kind of abstract and yet specific. But then the phone rings and he picks it up and he's like, oh, Erickson, and like looks up at the mob guy who's like, well, that would do it, like, yeah, all right.
put the mountain lion away, guys. I'm so excited. Another time. And yeah, Don Paolo says, you know, he wants these guys to watch the doors and he doesn't care about the cops. He only wants Erickson. And Elliot and the cops are like just not very far away. It's a couple minutes because they still have the cops on them. And Nate's like, Nate is telling them, like, if the cops get in here and you have a hostage, like, maybe you don't want it to look like you have a hostage. And Erickson's like, yeah, we should just untie him. And they're just like still just bickering. Oh, I'll say I arrested him. No, we're gonna get in trouble. Like, blah, blah, blah. And then Don Paolo makes his entrance and Erickson like grabs the gun from Rose really fast to pull on the mobsters. And he's like, how did you find me? Like, you idiot, you called your friend in New York. Like, that's how. And
the marshal, really?
Yeah.
What? She's you like, called well, him? You're
an idiot. And Don Paolo was like, well, granted, that only got us to Portland, but then we traced your phone because you left your GPS tracking on. And the marshal's like, oh, yeah, that's me. That was on me. My bad.
Which it is a good explanation for like why they didn't have the GPS on his phone before.
Yeah. Yeah. And then like this is another one of those moments where like Matthew Lillard is so good and like the writing for this is really well because it hits these little beats, like you were saying, because he's like, you know, put the gun down, and he's wielding his gun, and then he steps back and he trips over the duffel bag of money and the gun goes off and it like ricochets off a light and it like spooks the mobsters and then they run off and everybody's running away and shooting guns, and Nate's like rolling around on his roller chair trying to stay out of the line of fire.
He's doing that thing that like little kids do where he's like trying to push off from other things.
And Parker comes over and she grabs a bobby pin out of her hair and opens up his handcuffs, and Nate takes the orange soda and like pours it out, and then
Parker's like, that's the good stuff.
Imported from Mexico. Like, is it Fanta? Like, what?
It probably means it's got real like, sugar in it.
Yeah. It's like the like Mexican Coke.
That's the difference with Coke.
Yeah. But like, you can afford more. You're fine.
He also, I mean, I guess Nate could have specified, bring me an empty orange soda bottle.
Yeah.
But
it's fine. It's not as funny. So Sophie's filling them in on the cops are on the north side of the warehouse, and she's like in the warehouse, and several of the mob guys see her and they like start walking toward her, and she's still talking. She's like, oh, and the south entrance will be clear in 10 seconds. And Elliot has come up behind them and he punches them out. And then she goes, oh, make it five.
I mean, it's only two guys. It's right? Not like a,
so easy.
A long time.
Yeah. The marshal is exchanging gunfire with the mob men because she has another gun, on like an ankle holster gun that we see her pull out. Which I think is another good thing. Like, if she just suddenly had another gun, we'd be like, where the hell did she get the second gun? Because Erickson has her gun. So I thought that was really nice that they put that in. And they're all, like, just, like, running in between the aisles of this warehouse, shooting at each other. And Parker and Nate and Ellie and Hardison, like, Parker's saying, like, do you think it'll work? And they are filling the 2-liter bottle with vegetable oil, because of course there's vegetable oil in these big tubs, jug things. And they're gonna fuel the Packard up because a lot of the cars in the 30s were diesels and they could run on vegetable oil. So they're gonna try to run this car, which is out right in the open in the middle of this gunfight. And Hardison is not sure this is gonna work out. Like, he's like, are we going to pray that it's bulletproof like the Batmobile? But then a bullet ricochets nearby and he's like, okay, never mind. I'm in. Let's go.
It's an old joke, but it's always a good one.
Right. So they run toward the car. The marshal comes through. She sees the bag of money. So she grabs it and then she takes off.
Oh, wait. I think I missed it. There was a part where when Erickson is running away and trying to explain that, like, he's trying to talk his way out of it.
Yeah, that happens like right here.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. I thought it happened before. Okay.
No, you're good. You're good. You didn't miss that.
Oh, I just like that when he's running away, he does a full on like Shaggy yell. I'm like, oh. I have no Shaggy impression.
Zoinks!
Basically, it's that. And like, I don't know if it was intentional or not, but I hope it is because it worked very well.
Just a little callback.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, and he's trying to bargain with them. He's like, I wasn't going to testify against you, I promise. I was just trying to avoid prosecution, and I'll give you half of my $50 million in the Caymans. And then he's like, okay, never mind, you can have all of it, because they keep shooting at him. And Nate has poured the vegetable oil into the fuel tank of the car by this point. And then he's like, oh, Hardison, like, there's only a couple dozen banks down the Caymans, right? And Hardison's like, focus. Focus on starting this car. How about that? And we'll deal with that later. And so they like start the car and it takes a second, but it catches and it starts up and it pulls away. But Erickson notices and he like steps out in front of the car and he's like pointing the gun at it. And he's like, he says, please. He's like, stop, please stop my car. Stop, please. And then they play chicken. And this was actually Matthew Lillard.
Yeah, John Rogers blames Christian Kane's influence.
And they're like, I think that he might, like, his toe might have brushed the car as he jumped out of the way as well. Like, it was that close. Because, you know, he jumps out of the way. And it's like so casual. He drives out and Sophie and Elliot just like close the door and just slowly walk out behind them. And Erickson has to watch them go. And then the Portland police show up and they've got the place surrounded and they've all got their guns pointed at Erickson. And then we see like Don Paolo like look and then like, boop, 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 like Scooby-Doo, like.
Yeah,
tiptoes out of there. Tiptoe out. Thank you. I was like, what is that called? Tiptoes out of there. And then we don't even see, like,
the New York mobster. It's not like the Portland police are gonna recognize him from 50 feet away and be like, it's Don Paolo, get him.
Right. I like that this is literally, that's the last time that we see Erickson.
Yeah. Please, yeah. Got him.
Please got him. It's fine. And then we're back at the car show with Don Paolo. And he's impressed. He's like, you put all this together. And Nate's like, actually.
They're sitting at a little cafe table, like next to food trucks, but it's their brewery. Like their brewery's name is on the umbrellas.
Hmm.
Yeah. So like they put it all together. Something. Like, okay, let's put some food out. Or whatever, like let's sell some food, or they're like sponsoring it or something. But it, yeah, it's like a real thing now. It pans over and you can see it on the. It's what is it, like the Portland Brewing Company or something.
Yeah. I did not notice that. I love it.
Yeah, it's really cute. Cause yeah, he's like, oh, you put all this together.
Yeah, and he's like, yeah, we handed out the trophies yesterday, but these people won't leave. So they're having a meeting and he's, you know, he's like, you asked to speak with me. And Nate says, we recovered the $50 million from Erickson's bank. And I would like to distribute this money to the people that he stole it from, which is like him asking like permission. Like, I want your permission to do this and for you not to want this money for yourself.
Yeah. Cause so you Nate don't come after me. Go up against the mob.
Nate's from Boston. He knows. He knows. Yeah. And, you know, Don Paolo says, I have no claim on that money. And I don't want to pick a fight with someone like you. So if I can avoid it. And then he asks about the marshal and Nate's like, I got it taken care of. And we see her at an airport trying to get into Canada. And
just for just a week trip.
Just a little weekend getaway, you know, just girl things. And they open up her bag and the money's there with the phone right on top.
Which so. I'm so sad that there wasn't some way to bring back the Fish and Wildlife people from the French Connection job. And there isn't, there's no, but they could have been like in the background or something, or like Nate could have tipped them off somewhere. Like I'm so sad because I loved them.
They were wonderful. I really like them. So I agree. And then Nate asks Don Paolo, like, you know, one other thing, I want you to leave Erickson alone in prison. And he's like, no, can't do it. I want him dead. And he's like, no, but listen, you only need him to be quiet. He's been picked up by the police. His marshal's gone rogue. He's going to lose his immunity. And he's going to stand trial for his stuff for a long time. Let him live and enjoy that punishment. And he's like, and then he points out that the mob originally was in its original and purest form law enforcement, because they were in the neighborhoods where the police didn't have any ability to enforce the law. And then we go back to our thesis for the season. Nate says there was a purpose. They were trying to build something. And then Don Paolo, like, he's like looking around the car show and he's like, we lost sight of that. And Nate's like, yeah, we can all be better, huh? And the way that Don Paolo is looking at this car show, I'm like, Don Paolo is going to go start car shows. Like, he's like,
right. Well, he's looking around at,
turning
like,
over Nate, a new.
But like, Nate made this thing and it's going to like keep existing.
Yeah. People are enjoying it. It's doing good for them. It's not just.
Yeah. No, I feel like Don Paolo's going to go back and like, go check out the old neighborhood and like check in on some little old ladies and bring them groceries the way that like the original mob did, sort of like it, you paid into it, but like you got protection from people.
Yeah. So he's like, you know what? We might have to pivot on our mission statement. Yeah. Go back to our roots. And back at the brew pub, Nate's speaking with their clients about how it's going to be hard to get the landscaping business up going again. And he says, the thing I've learned about hard work, Mr. Ford, makes coming home at night to the people that you love feel better, or feel even better. And he's like, that's true. Hey, take care. And Hardison comes in and tells him that they returned the car. My worry about this car, even though they were made to use diesel and they did use vegetable oil, is the vegetable oil going to mess up the gas tank of this car?
Hopefully they fixed that.
siphoned the rest of it back out and like flushed the engine.
Because like the car had been restored at some point, right? That's the point of the like old world craftsmanship line.
Yeah.
So yeah, hopefully they found someone at the car show who like knows their business to go in and give it a clean out and what, because they also have to like wash off all that fake dust and refill the tires and get it all ship shape.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just worried that down the road this guy's gonna be like, what the hell happened to my car?
Yeah. It's all greasy. What's going on?
Smells like we're making French fries or something.
I don't know. Oh. I get big Ferris Bueller vibes. Like, did they drive it backwards to get the
odometer to go down? Yeah. So Hardison has a question for Nate, and he's like, all right, you knew that the Mussolini car would drive him crazy. So crazy that he'd call an old car contact, access secret bank accounts, turn on his babysitter, and almost get taken out by the mob guys who are out to get him, right? And he's like, yeah. And he's like, that's like five different things that nobody could have ever known what was going to happen, that would happen. And Nate's like, okay, well, I only knew three out of the five. And he's like, well, which three? And he's like, he just walks off. Doesn't tell him.
Arson's like, why you gotta do me like that, man?
Yeah. And he kind of like rolls his eyes. And Nate goes over to sit with Sophie, and she says, you know, she brings up what he was saying in the warehouse about putting the past behind you. And it's so cute because he's like, well, I had a gun to my head. And she's like, this is our bar. I'm sure I could rustle up a gun. and he tells her that she was wrong about something. And she's like, oh, yeah, I could never be right. Right. But he says, wanting to move on with or without you, it matters. We matter. And you're like, oh, that's sweet. That's sweet.
Yeah. It's a very sweet episode.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it does a little check in with all the characters, and they're all doing pretty well.
Yeah.
It's nice.
It's a good episode. It's just a good episode.
Really good episode. I'm kind of sad they never brought that mobster guy back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's a local Portland actor. He's like Shakespearean actor.
He's very good. But I like the idea of the mob, like, not like consulting with Nate, but being like a source of information of like, hey, this bad thing is happening and it's not really in our line. And like, we don't have a source of profit on it, but like, we think it's kind of messed up. Thought you'd like to know about it.
Right.
Right. And just being like another stream of where they get clients from.
Yeah. I think that'd be interesting. Or like, cause that's like, that was the New York mob.
I think so. Right? Yeah.
It wasn't Boston. But like, putting them in touch with the mob in Pacific Northwest.
Yeah.
I'm sure it exists. I have a little tiny high slight. Yeah. It's just a really short one. When they discovered that Erickson's been scamming people out of money for the Wi-Fi password, Sophie refers to this like parking lot scam. And apparently, I don't know how based in reality is, it's more of an urban legend, but in Bristol, England, for like 25 years, there was a paid parking lot next to their zoo in Bristol. And it was, you know, like $5 to park or whatever for the zoo for the day. And then one day, the parking lot attendant who'd been there every day for 25 years did not show up. And the zoo people called the parking lot company and was like, hey, your employee didn't show up. Like, what do you want to do? And they're like, we don't own that parking lot. Like, that's just a public free parking lot. And like, then they never saw this man again. He just disappeared. And they estimate that he made about $7 million. Conning people out of their money for 25 years. But then this evidently is not completely true because it ran as part of an April Fool's Day article, but I think it's hilarious that I also it think exists in the Leverage world.
I also think there are versions of that that are definitely true, where like parking around DC, there have absolutely been times when I have like gone to park for concerts or something, and like the, you know, you go to pull in and like parking rates aren't really posted, and there's like a guy standing there who's like, it's $20 in cash, and you like hand them a 20 and then they give you a ticket that's like clearly made on an inkjet printer somewhere, right? And it's like, oh, this could easily be a $12 parking lot to park for the night, and you've taken down the sign and you're charging 20, and you're gonna turn around and just like pocket that $8. And like, on the one hand, it sucks because you're taking my money, but on the other hand, like, good looking out, man. Like,
I know, it sucks because you want to be annoyed, but also you're like, well,
it's also, I mean, it's a sliding scale, right? Like, there are people who, like, my sister lives in Ann Arbor, and she has friends who will absolutely, like, move their cars out to further out because they live near the stadium. And then they're like, oh, you can rent our driveway to park for the football game because we are a 5-minute walk to the stadium.
Yeah.
So, like, they'll have someone email, like, they'll book it out in advance and be like, yeah, it's $40, but you have a guaranteed spot to park.
Wow. So, in, like, a safe place. Like,
yeah, I mean, like, that's, you know, what is that, a scam? Like, no. Is the other thing a scam? Yes, but they're kind of similar.
Yeah,
similar ideas.
And it does suck to be like, all right, that was $8 of my dollars you took, but also you didn't hurt me, you didn't take any of my like private information, or like, that's the end of our involvement, like.
Yeah.
On the scale of cons, it's pretty low.
The closest low I've ever come to conning was once at a, there's like a big street fair where I grew up, and my student council, we somehow got volunteered to like do parking lot duty or something in high school. So it was me and this kid, Josh. Like, our parking lot was assigned for only people who had vendor tags who were supposed to park there. Like, you had to be a vendor. And there was a guy who was like, hey, can I park here? And we were like, no, only if you're a vendor. And he was like, hey, my wife's really pregnant. Like, can I just pay you guys? Like, basically, it was like, do you like bribes?
You're like, do you like a bribe? What do you feel about
sure, that? I guess. And he gave us each $20. And this is like the late 90s, like $20 was $20, and we let him in and parked. And then when he came out, and he brought us Dippin' Dots and street corn, it was like, we got this for you, thanks for letting us park. We're like, okay, thanks, great,
amazing.
So I guess maybe that was my version of the parking lot.
There you go, your own parking lot jam. Hilarious. Do you have a high slate?
Not really. I wanted to see if the Mussolini car thing was based on like a real event or like a real car. So I Googled like Mussolini's lost car, and there's a half dozen of them. Like, because Mussolini, as it turns out, really liked cars. And so a lot of them have shown up and have been like restored or not restored, or like, you know, they found out they've been destroyed, or people have them and they've been in various parades. So yeah, it wasn't really like there isn't one story about it. It's like, oh, he really liked cars and had a lot of them, and a lot of them are still around. So yeah, it's not a very good high slate, but
yeah. In the commentary, they said, they were saying something along, they didn't like go into like that he was a big car person, but they said, after the episode had been written or had come out, news came out that they'd found like one of Hitler's BMWs or something.
Okay.
And it was like very, very similar to the story here.
Yeah.
And they're, Alessandra was like, can you sue for copywriting real life? Like, I was like, that's hilarious.
So it looks like, I mean, there was a 1930 Alfa, they're almost all Alfa Romeos. There was a 1930, a 1938, a 1939. Like, all of these have been found and were Mussolini's at some point. And so, yeah, I imagine Hitler had a similar thing where, but also I think part of the like mystique that you have to, or like the public persona you have to put together is like being in the best vehicle available. So you would get a new one whenever there was a new one that came out. You'd always have the top of the line valuable one. So that's going to be something that people will want to keep up. Like, even if it's not because that's what they owned, like, it will be a valuable car.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Funny thing, because that's not something that we like talk about with celebrities much anymore, right? It's not like there have been no articles about like, this is the car that, you know, Trump is going to buy now that he's not president, or like, Biden didn't bring a car to the White House. But like, these aren't things that we talk about. It's like, oh yeah, the president is in like big black SUVs. That's president always.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. That is true.
That's all I had.
I
was really happy to watch it a bunch of times.
Yeah, me too. It was really great.
Oh, we don't have anything up to update on the new Leopard, right?
I did see one other post that kind of went with the ones that I was mentioning at the end of the episode last week. And it was with, so the first one was Beth sitting in Gina's chair, and then Gina put something in Beth's chair, and then Beth was sitting in Christian Kane's chair, and then he was like chasing her away, and it was like an action, like blurred shot, and it was really cute.
Oh yeah, it's like, this one's just right.
Yeah. I do want to point out that the shot where she's sitting in Elliot's chair, it looks like they're in a nursery in the background. And the picture that Gina Bellman had posted was like a little stuffed octopus toy sitting on Beth's seat. And that's like on a shelf in the background. And there you can see like diapers and like cute little wallpaper. So does someone have a baby?
Parker and Hardison having a baby, and that's why Hardison can't be in as many episodes, because he's like,
he's a stay-at-home dad.
Well, he can do his job from home easier than Parker can. Parker's job does not telework well.
No. Oh my God. And I know that, I don't know who I talked about it with, but we're like, Hardison definitely wants to adopt. He wants to foster, because that's what he...
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't see Parker wanting to be pregnant. Slow her down.
Yeah. Although I can also see a world where they do the joke of Parker with the giant belly still like repelling from stuff.
Oh my God, you're right.
Like cutting a hole in the glass to go through, and then cutting like a little bit extra on the side for her bump to go through. like drawing a perfect circle, and then like a little crescent out of the bottom so she can climb through.
Oh my gosh. Yes. That would also be great.
I'm still really curious at how they're going to write Nate off.
Yeah. I don't know. Will Sophie be a widow? I feel like that's the only way. And I'll have like a little like memorial to him somewhere.
I mean, I guess you could put him in prison, or you could be like, oh, Nate is gone on a job.
I don't think that's permanent enough.
And I can't see them like working with there's going to have to be some reason why like they trust Noah Wiley.
Mm-hmm.
We need a trailer.
I know. Or just like you were saying, just a release date. Like it, I mean, yeah. It looks like they're still filming, so...
And I get that with COVID filming, everything is very slow.
Yeah.
Because like, yeah, the number of it's, yeah, I think it's really, really slow filming stuff like that.
Yeah.
Draft.
Just have to be patient.
Yeah.
Just hold your patient.
They're apparently redoing some stuff with Stargate. So I don't know if the Dean Devlin connection will mean that probably Noah Wiley will be in that one too.
Ooh, that would be good. Yeah, I think that's about all. You're not super big on social media. So if people want to tell you anything, you can tweet at me at LibrarianSti on Twitter. You won't see us again, but you'll hear us again in 1 week when we talk about the broken wing job with Lisa Lynn.